What's up, guys? I'm Jared Lopes, and you're listening to the Dad Tired Podcast, where I'm helping everyday families learn how to follow Jesus in everyday life. How's it going, guys? Jared Lopes back with you on the Dad Tired Podcast. It's good to be with you. If you are new to the Dad Tired community, welcome. It's good to have you here. We are a group of men from around the world who are taking our faith, our family, and our marriage very seriously. And we'd love to have you be part of that community. You can do that by going to dadtired.com and clicking the community tab. That will link you to a closed group on Facebook where there are over 1,500 guys from around the world who are doing their best to be the best men that God has called them to be. All kinds of good stuff happening on there. There's prayer requests, guys confessing sin, asking for advice, sharing stories, making each other laugh, all kinds of good stuff. There's also a lot of meetups starting to happen. So if you want to meet other guys in your area who are trying to take, who are just serious about the same things that you're serious about, then that's a great place to get connected. Again, dadtired.com and click the community tab, and that will link you over to that closed group on Facebook. Today, we've got an interview for you from Joey Svensson. I might be, Joey, if you're listening, man, I apologize if I'm saying your name wrong. Joseph Joey Svensson. Svensson. I should probably have asked him how to pronounce this. Joey, I apologize, man. Super cool dude. He's going to drop all kinds of good truth today. And unlike me, he's probably going to be a little more articulate. But anyway, Joey is a author. He's a pastor. He wrote a book called The Fundamentalist, which is coming out soon. Super interesting book, it sounds like, from what I've read, the parts that I've read, and from this interview. He's also a pastor of a church called Sea Coast Church, and a co-host in one of the most popular Christian podcasts on iTunes called Bad Christian. They have over 250,000 listeners worldwide. So Joey's got a lot of experience, and he's talking about some real stuff. He's talking about what it means to be real in the thick of Christian culture. He's battled with some OCD, with some depression, with some really heavy stuff. And instead of hiding it, he decided to talk about it and to bring it to light and to talk about things that many people in the church are experiencing and just having a hard time bringing up and pulling that mask off and being real. So that's what we're all about at Dad Tired, man. If you're new to this whole thing, that's what we're about. We're not into just like faking it or doing stuff for the sake of tradition. We really want to be about Jesus and to be real. We've all got junk and all kinds of crap that we're going through, and we just don't want to fake it because we believe that the good news of Jesus, that his grace is enough, that it is sufficient. So anyway, before I get too preachy, I will just let Joey come on in and start to drop some truth bombs on us. So help me welcome Joey Svensson. Joey, are you dad tired, man?
Yes, man, and I'm loving it. Nice. I'm loving it.
Nice. Yeah, tell me about your family.
Oh, man, my wife and I, we started, you know, getting busy in 06 having kids, and every other year, man, every other year until 2012. So we're up to four. We have thrown in the towel officially, scientifically, biologically, by surgery. So we, you know, unless we turn a corner in the future and we find that adoption is a good thing for us, then, you know, we're done, dude.
Nice, man. Girls, boys, what are their ages?
Two girls and two boys.
Okay.
Nice. We have a 10 and an 8-year-old girls and then 6 and 4-year-old boys.
Nice, man. Yep. Good mix.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. In that order too. It's pretty sweet.
Nice. So you're a co-host on the Bad Christian podcast. You've got a couple other podcasts, right? Going?
Yeah. So we have Bad Christian and then Pastor With No Answers, which my brother and I do. And Bad Christian, we've got somewhat of a network of other podcasts, but I don't, you know, other than being a guest on there, I don't really have a whole lot of a hand in.
Okay. And you just wrote a book, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Fundamentalist. So basically, I I started dabbling with the idea of writing a book, but I didn't really know exactly what a book by Joey Svensson looked like. And so I just started to write down different reflections of growing up, how I grew up, which is basically I grew up in very fundamental legalistic churches, and I took all that stuff into heart. And so I really was a very legalistic, burdened young man, constantly afraid of hell and constantly just, I mean, fearful, man. Like, didn't really see God as, I mean, I saw God as somebody that loved me, but I also saw him as someone who, you know, was more programmatic and was like, yeah, sorry, man. If, you know, if you slip up and say a cuss word and then you die in a car wreck on a technicality, we're going to be separated forever. So it was just kind of like that sort of framework for life. And then you add into the mix that just naturally I was predisposed through genetics to have a lot of irrational thinking, a lot of obsessive compulsive disorder type deals and depression. And it was just a recipe for disaster. And I just realized as I was writing this stuff down, I was like, man, this is not normal stuff. Like, this is worth sharing. If I'm willing to kind of humiliate myself, I think maybe some people could be less alone. I'll give you one example. I remember sitting in Psych 101 in high school, my senior year, and they were talking, the textbook talked about people that had such bad, irrational OCD thinking that let's say they misplaced a sticky note. And then they just started being consumed with always thinking they lost a sticky note. So every time they walked into a room, they would check books, they would check under the rug, they would check under the mattress. And then when it got to its worst level, somebody would, you know, open up their cigarette before smoking their cigarette to make sure there wasn't a sticky note in there, which is obviously there's no sticky note in there because it's irrational. But I remember thinking to myself, man, that's crazy. Like those people, man, that's tough. That's some crazy suffering. But then it hit me. I was like, I am no different. Like, mine really did get to that degree. It just looked different. Like, it was more spiritual in nature. But I mean, we're talking, I would say the sinner's prayer multiple times daily. And then I would think, oh, that didn't count because I wasn't concentrating, or that didn't count because I didn't address Jesus respectfully, or I should have addressed God and not Jesus, or I wasn't really sorry when I asked for forgiveness, or I wasn't really believing. And I mean, it would get so bizarre. I'd be like, okay, finally, I said it right. And then 10 minutes later, I'd be like, wait a second, I don't even know if I was awake. Like, I just got up. Maybe I was kind of sleeping. And so for people that don't struggle in that capacity, or they've never struggled with those sorts of thoughts, that just sounds ludicrous. That's just like, how in the world could you ever think that stuff? But when you think that the brain is a physical organ that when malfunctioning, it messes your thinking up, that should, you know, highlight it a little bit and help people understand.
Yeah. So in your journey of kind of coming to grips after going through that class, and that maybe that was the first light bulb for you to realize, like, oh crap, like I think I've got this. What have you found? How many people suffer from this?
Oh gosh. Statistically, I mean, it's definitely in the millions. Now I think the tough distinction to make is, I mean, if you just basically say mental illness, then obviously the number skyrockets. But if you talk about OCD and those sorts of things, but interestingly enough, with your question, there is a scientific term for, you know, more of a spiritual fear / OCD. It's called scrupulosity. And I reference that in my book, and like reading this online and like hearing people's depiction of what they struggle with, I was like, oh my gosh. Like, this is exactly the sorts of thoughts that I battled. And so that's exactly what I had. And they said that is the rarest form of OCD. And that's linked with like a spiritual fear of God and hell and punishment and, you know, always trying to measure up and never being at peace and those sorts of things. And I'm still, you know, I don't want this to come across as, yep, that was the past. I'm all good to go now. I mean, I'm still kind of unraveling some of this stuff. I mean, I would say for the most part, it's something in my past, but I find myself daily realizing, oh wow, no, there's still some stuff here that I need to shed. It's just been, yeah, it's just been so a part of me for so many years.
Right. And you had mentioned depression in there. Was that the start of the depression once you realized that, or was depression already in the mix, or did it contribute to it? What were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I didn't realize, you know, looking back, I'm pretty sure that I struggled with depression. I mean, remnants of it at an early age. Like I remember, you know, at the end of the weekend on a Sunday night, just not functioning as a normal kid. I would feel almost depressed and weighed down about school the next day. And I know everybody, oh, of course, every kid feels that way. But mine was deeper. It was like a sense of how could the school system take me away from my family? Like, this is my family. I don't want to go away from them. It was just kind of more of a deeper angst. And as an adult, I look back on that. I'm like, that's not normal. I mean, that's one thing to be bummed out about having to go to school. It's a whole nother thing to, you know, to feel that sort of burden. But I didn't realize that I actually struggled, you know, from a chemical perspective. Well, I mean, it's all chemical basically, but I didn't know that it was clinical depression until, gosh, in college. My parents, you know, they were telling me for a long time, man, you really need to go to the doctor. You need to talk to somebody. You need to take medicine. Your dad struggles with this sort of thing. And I was always like, no, nope, this is spiritual in nature. Once I can get right with God, all this stuff goes away. Not realizing that the reason why I didn't feel right with God is because of the mental illness in the first place. So to make a long story short, and I go into it a little more in depth in the book, my brother was setting me up with a blind date. I was in Rock Hill, South Carolina, like 25 miles south of Charlotte. He was in Greenville. So about an hour and a half drive, I was like super excited, you know, to be going to, you know, going there for the weekend. And man, I get to hang out with this hot girl that my brother speaks highly of and everything. Well, it fell through. My brother told me, hey, this isn't going to happen. And, it shouldn't have bothered me at all. I didn't have anything invested in this. I didn't know this girl or anything. And I sat there on my couch, and instead of going back to my John Madden's football, I just plummeted. Like, it just devastated me. I was crushed. And I was able to kind of think about my thoughts. And I was like, wait a second, this isn't normal. This isn't right. Like, I feel absolutely obliterated right now. And it's over nothing. It's over a girl I don't even know. And so at that point, you know, whether God opened my eyes or whether I just came to my senses, I called my parents. I said, you guys have been right. So I need to start being proactive with taking steps to getting better.
Yeah. And so how do you go from that? How do you go from that, you know, starting to understand your journey and mental illness, feeling depression, maybe chemical imbalance, to ending up in ministry, especially when you've got one of the rarest forms of like this OCD that's a spiritual based, you know, how do you then say, yeah, I want to, you know what, I want to go even deeper to this whole Jesus and church stuff?
Yeah. I mean, that's a great question, man. You know, I would say that, so without trying to sound too spiritual, I believe that Christians go a little crazy with the terminology calling, but I believe that there is a basis for a calling. But I guess I would say, I think God probably has a decent path for every person, not just, you know, pastors or people that go into ministry. So maybe I see calling a little bit differently, but I do think that there was something there that I knew, okay, you know, whatever it looks like, I don't know, but I think that's going to be the direction of my life. And when I came to that realization, I was still in the thick and thin of this mental anguish of OCD, irrational thinking. This was like my freshman year of college. And I talk a lot about, you know, my college days and just how burdened I was and the hours that I would spend, you know, in prayer time. And basically the whole point of my prayer time was, you know, basically crossing all the T's and dotting all the I's of living my life right and saying the right things and doing the right things. But I think at the same time that calling was real. It just happened to be, I guess, given to me during a season where I was super mentally ill. So it's almost like two separate things going into play. I mean, it would be like if God called someone to, you know, crazy ministry while they were fighting cancer, and it's like, okay, well, this isn't the right timing, but after I can beat this cancer and get back on my feet and, you know, maybe I can pastor a church or something like that. So I think the calling was legitimate and I think my heart could accept that. But from that point on, there was years of healing that needed to take place. And hey, I mean, I've been in ministry now since 2005, and I would say the most healing that I've experienced is the last 3 or 4 years, which would be testimony to how God can use a really sick individual that's pretty broken to, you know, to do stuff through, which I think should be a reminder to all of us that it's not about us and what we are doing well and not doing well anyway.
Yeah. Joey, where are you from?
Charleston, man. Charleston, South Carolina.
Nice. You know, I'm going to be there. I'm going to be in South Carolina tomorrow.
Really? For what?
I'm filming. The company I own, we've got a project somewhere in South Carolina.
Yeah. What's your company? What do you do?
It's called Front Porch Branding. We do videos for other businesses.
Sweet.
So some businesses hired us to... I honestly don't totally know what we're doing, but I know we're going to be in South Carolina, Georgia, and Florida.
Nice, man. So all for the same business?
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah, man, the reason I asked you that question is because God has brought some Southern brothers into my life
the last year,
man, some really close friends of mine. And we've been talking about the difference between... perspective of what it means to be a follower of Jesus on West Coast. So one of my really good friends came from Atlanta and moved here to plant a church. And so he and I have been talking about like the difference of the culture of Christianity, West Coast in the South compared to the South. And he has said that like there's such a, on the West Coast, like if you are polished at all, like if you come across polished in any sense, you are immediately disregarded.
Wow.
Like, so on the West Coast here, like if I convince you that I've got all the answers, that I've got all my stuff together, like nobody here's listening. Like, dude, if you've got a bunch of degrees and you look like you've got your life together, I am not. Are you even prepared for this sermon?
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, you put some prep time into this? No, that's not from your heart, man. That's not genuine. I'm not into it. And he was saying in Georgia, it's actually the opposite. What his experience is like, polished is almost like it's revered. Revered might be too strong of a word, but it's respected. Like, you know, you want to look a certain way. There's a culture of kind of getting your act together a little bit more.
Right.
And so I'm curious your experience as a pastor now, with all the stuff that you've not just gone through, but the stuff that you've brought to light. You've written a book about it. Like you're confessing your junk to a bunch of people through podcasts, through books and interviews. What is the thing that you tell your church? And also, what are some of the challenges that you face with Christians in particular who we know are struggling with junk but cannot seem to get outside of the box to like live in a place of openly sharing junk in order to experience healing?
That I totally get you, man. It just tickled me because I don't know how in depth you wrote the book, but you kept using the word junk, which is kind of nickname for the genitals, which I have a whole chapter on. on irrational, you know, I basically had a fear that my sinful early masturbation as a kid, like as an adolescent, messed up my growth process as a male. As silly as that sounds, it was pretty devastating as a kid, and you kept saying junk, and it just reminded me of that. So if you want to edit that, feel free. But
no, dude, I don't edit on the Dad Tired Podcast, man. We keep everything raw.
Awesome. So, you know, it's frustrating, and at the same time, I guess I don't really involve myself into what you just said much, because all I can do is be open myself. All I can do is be honest. I'll give you, I think, a perfect example of what you're saying. A couple of Novembers ago, a pastor in the Charleston area, James Island to be specific, is the island that our church is on. It's part of Charleston County. And there was a pastor that committed suicide. And a few nights later, they had some pastors, me and another guy, and then a bunch of social workers go to this church to help the people process and be there and those sorts of things. And there was a third pastor, and she actually said to everyone publicly, Like someone at the church actually said, hey, why couldn't he have come to one of us? Why couldn't have he talked to us? We would have been there for him. And this pastor, she says to everyone, I was like, dear God, please retract that statement that you just said because you just highlighted the problem. She said, well, I'm sorry. Me as a pastor, I'm never going to talk to y'all about my deepest struggles. And that right there nailed it. I mean, to me, I wish I could have. It just wasn't my place, but I would have loved to have stepped in and said, ma'am, you just identified the problem. And unfortunately, you highlighted why this pastor killed himself because you guys put him in a position to where he felt like he had to be there for everyone else. He had to be, you know, sure, there's a biblical validity to shepherding, but you put him in such a shepherding role that he didn't feel there was any shepherd for him, even in his own congregation. And I'm telling you, man, if there are not people, like for pastors that are listening right now, if you don't have people in your church that you feel can pastor you, then you need to figure that out. You need to figure out someone in your church. Don't have this stupid, you know, mentality of, oh no, I have to go outside of the church to do this. Why? The person that you're going to go outside of your church for, they're not even with you 24, or, you know, they're not with you 7 days a week. They're not there on Sunday mornings necessarily. They're not there during the work week. You need someone who is in your life. So, I mean, I had someone come up to me when all this stuff was going on, and she was fairly new to the church, probably new to her faith. And she said something to me, and it was just so beautiful. She said, I want you to realize, and she said, I need to know that you would be willing to talk to, you know, my husband or me or other people in this church if you ever felt so depressed that you felt, you know, close to suicide or felt like you were giving up on living and that sort of thing. And to me, that wasn't a shot to my pride in the least. That was the reality of Christian faith and being a church, is that the pastor is not this untouchable person that doesn't have any problems. The pastor is someone who, for some reason or another, God said, eeny, meeny, miny, mo, you're it, you're leading, and I'm going to give you the tools to do this, but you're just like everyone else. So yeah. So you better lean on other people. And I just, man, I actually told her recently how like eye-opening that was, and I wish more people had that approach.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's frustrating, man. It's frustrating, and there's so many pastors that I think are depressed because I think that not only are people that are called to or attracted to the pastoral role, I think are predisposed to that, but also just that job in itself, you know, can really aggravate the whole, you know, depression thing. And so it's just unfortunate that more people don't feel comfortable enough to open up about it.
Yeah. So what I've learned in 11 years of ministry is every teacher, every pastor, everybody that feels like God's laid something on their heart to share, they kind of have the thing that has runs through everything else that they say. So they can teach on any other passage or teach on any other subject, but they always seem to come back to this one central like thing that weaves in and out of their life at every platform they get. Is there something for you that you feel like, this is your heartbeat? This is like the one thought or message that you can't stop sharing.
Yeah. I guess I would say that it's the guy in the Bible that basically, you know, says to Jesus, okay, yeah, I do believe, but help me with my disbelief. And that right there, Jesus did not respond like with aggravation, frustration. Like there wasn't anything bad with that statement. But I think oftentimes, there's whole church cultures that are just like, if you take that approach, man, that's just lack of faith. I mean, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they actually said the Lord will deliver us, but if he does not. Now, you get into name it, claim it cultures, and they would say, oh, stop right there. You just let the devil in. You know, you just acknowledge that God may not pull through. No, it's acknowledging that God is God and you're not. So you don't know exactly how he's going to, you know, play the situation out. So I think for me, it is okay to say, man, I'm trying to believe. And it's okay mm-hmm. for even a pastor. And sure, you use discernment with how vocal to be with this. I mean, I would say we need to, if anything, push the boundaries of being more vocal with these sorts of doubts, because many people struggle with it. They don't feel like they have anybody to talk to. But it's okay to say, man, I'm having a hard time even believing, period. Like, the most encouraging thing for me to my faith, the thing that has bolstered my faith, has been community and hearing other people's doubts, hearing other people's faith, hearing how people have overcome doubts, hearing the very reasons of why people believe that Jesus is Lord, and like what that means to them, what happened in their life that made them come to that revelation. I mean, those right there are the most strengthening things to my faith, period. And I think we will hear less and less of that stuff unless we're willing to say, hey, I'm struggling with believing. Lord, please help me believe. And hey, those of you that I know, my friends, please help me believe. Like, tell me why you believe, you know?
That's a good word, man. We've got a lot of guys listening, a lot of dads, a lot of husbands. I think kind of what's attracted guys to the Dad Tired community is hopefully the place that they feel like they can be that,
yeah,
where they can be authentic and they recognize that they're broken and messed up, but they don't want to be.
Yeah.
What kind of last words here? What would be your encouraging word to a dad or a husband right now that maybe is either actually has some kind of mental illness,
yeah,
maybe thinks they do, or are like, man, I don't know, I'm struggling with my thoughts and that I feel kind of all over the place. I might have some mental illness. Or certainly guys, and we've got a ton who would openly say, like, I'm just depressed, man. And I don't know if I'm clinically yeah. depressed or not clinically depressed, but at the end of the day, I'm depressed. And what would you say to that guy?
Yeah. Well, two things. First of all, it does not hurt to just go to a doctor or go to a pastor. But I would say eventually, if you think that you're struggling with depression, go to a doctor and just say, hey, here's the sorts of things that, and I would say probably try to find a doctor that does not have a reputation of just throwing medicine at the problem. I am on antidepressants, but I don't believe that that's necessarily the first resort that everybody needs to run to. It may be where you need to go, but go to a doctor that's not just going to run, oh, okay, here's some medicine. Go to a doctor that may even be a little, critical and figure out, very compassionately, okay, let's talk about this. Maybe it's something that you can get counseling for, but at least seek medical help to eliminate things that, maybe you shouldn't be doing, but maybe you do need to pursue. And it may be counseling, medication, or something like that. I guess the second thing I would say is, and it's probably a smaller demographic for those that do struggle with legalism and, being really hard on yourself and maybe throw in a dose of depression. You are never going to be the perfect dad. You're never going to be the perfect husband. And I think everybody hearing me now, oh, of course. But let that sink into your heart and take that to the next step. And I would say the next step is to acknowledge when your kids leave your household, there will be at least one thing that is a part of their story that they say, yeah, my dad kind of messed me up in this regard. Growing up, he didn't say this enough, or he said this too much, or he did this too much, or there's going to be something. And it doesn't even have to be like a devastating blow. It won't necessarily be their identity. I'm not talking about alcoholism or abuse or anything like that. There's going to be something where they say, yeah, mom and dad kind of dropped the ball on this. And that's a part of just being human. Like, no kid gets blessed with a perfect dad and a perfect mom. And I would take it even further. If you could give your kids a perfect household, would that be a benefit to them? I would say no, because then they would leave your perfect household and enter imperfect world. And they'd be like, wait a second, everything was perfect at home, and now I don't know what to do with imperfection. So I am not encouraging to, half-ass being a dad. I'm not encouraging not to try. All I'm saying is do the best you can, but know that your goal is not perfection. That wouldn't do your kid any good in the first place. And all of that applies to you know, being a husband as well. Your wife did not get to get the best husband. There are things that she has to deal with in her marriage that she has to get over that you're going to work on, but you're never going to, you know, totally overcome.
Hmm. That's good, man. That's a hard pill to swallow. Even as you're saying that, I'm like, oh crap. I've gone through counseling stuff. And I'm like, what is my kid going to sit down with a counselor or in some like group stuff? And what are they going to be saying about me? You know, and the reality is you're right. There's going to be things that they're going to say about me. And that's the truth.
Yeah, totally. I mean, my son, and I hate this, man. Like my son is already struggling with the sort of thoughts that I struggled with, and it kills me. I mean, I wish that I could just pray and God would heal him, and maybe he will someday, but my son is articulating very bizarre concerns. And so I sat him down the other day and I said, look, I said, first of all, I don't want you to feel bad about having these thoughts in your head. But I said, secondly, just because they're in your head, it doesn't mean that they're real, and it doesn't mean you need to worry about them. I mean, I'll just tell you, I mean, it sounds really bizarre, but we're sitting there watching a Christmas movie and he said, Dad, I really feel bad because I keep telling myself that I hate Christmas. He said, but I know that I don't hate Christmas, but I can't keep thinking that. And so in his little mind, he just kept hearing hate Christmas, hate Christmas, hate Christmas. And obsessive compulsive disorder, basically part of that is if you think something there's some legitimacy there and you need to tend to it and you need to almost feed it. And thankfully his way of feeding it was articulating it to me out loud.
Yeah.
And me as basically a 40-year-old guy that's been there, done that, I can at least give him tools such as, look, it doesn't mean you're bad and it doesn't mean that they're true. So when those sorts of thoughts are in your head, don't feel bad about it. And also just say, well, it's not true. And even though it's making me feel bad, I don't have to feel even worse about feeling bad about them.
Yeah, man, breaks my heart even hearing that.
Yeah.
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 That, you know, we'll wrap up. I have two thoughts here as we kind of wrap up. Number one, my first thought is I just can't wait for God to make all things new again when we just don't have to struggle with all this crap, man.
That's our hope, man.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to that day. And also kind of going back to what we were just saying, for those of you guys that are listening, you've got two pastors here telling you that we're struggling in the thick of like real life with you. And our goal is never to be perfect, that we would not be perfect husbands and perfect dads and perfect friends and men, but that we would just point constantly to the one who is, that we'd point our wives to the perfect God, that our kids back to the perfect father. But Joey, thank you, man, for taking the time to hang out with us today. I do want to give you just a minute, man, to close out and give us some plugs. Tell us where we can get your book, where we can connect with you on the podcast and all that good stuff.
Yeah, man. So you can go to fundamentalistpastor.com, and surprisingly enough, that website was not taken. We grabbed that one. So fundamentalistpastor.com, depending on when this episode comes out, you can pre-order it or order it. And then, yeah, I'm on a podcast called Pastor with No Answers. And basically, you know, we're either talking to someone about their life story, typically a unique life story, or we've got people from the Christian faith that see complete opposite ends of the spectrum of a certain issue. And we talk it through. And, you know, the lesson is that basically the point is I'm not here to necessarily give you this nice packaged answer. I want you to see that Christians can disagree and still be brothers and sisters and that sort of thing. And then the Bad Christian podcast as well. So you can check either one of those out.
Perfect, man. That's awesome. Thank you. Thank you again for taking the time to hang out. If you're not already, we do have that closed group of guys on Facebook. There's about 1,500 guys from around the world on there. And
awesome,
we would love to have you in that group if you're on Facebook. And I think some of your perspective would be huge for some of the things that are posted on there and questions that are asked. So we'd love to have you if you want to join that. But anyway, I know you're busy. So thank you so much for taking the time to hang out today. I really do appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, man. Thanks for what you're doing. It's awesome.
Thank you, man. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Bye-bye now.